Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, coming to you from our beautiful Channel 9 studios. We have the privilege today of talking to Yusuf Khalidi, Corporate Vice President of Azure Networking. How are you doing, my friend?
How are you, Seth?
I'm fantastic. So you've been around Azure for a while.
It's been a while.
Tell us about the early days of Azure, because I hear there's this really fun incident that happened with Scott Guthrie. I heard it's apocryphal.
It is true, though.
So tell us about what happened.
Let me go back a bit more in history.
Okay.
So we started the project in 2006.
Okay.
There were like six, seven people of us with basically the idea of let's go build a big platform for the web. We built something. We shipped it, if you remember, preview beta 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It was a PDC. Frankly, it was hardly working then. Okay, it was fine, you know, small number of machines and so forth. Then Scott came over and said, guys, let's make sure that the system is actually usable. So they got us together in a hotel back in Redmond. And they gave us credit cards. They split us into teams, tables, gave a credit card to every table and said, go sign up into Azure and use it. And we spent the better part of a day. And some of us who even built the platform had problems using it.
Holy cow.
And most of the room could not even log in and create an account and so forth. At that time, it was very clunky, frankly.
Well, I remember using it myself. There was a Silverlight portal, if I remember right, and you could spin up VMs, and there was...
Yes.
I had a hard time myself.
There was actually a portal before that. Even.
Oh, even before that.
Before
okay.
that.
Okay.
The sign-up process used to be very, very flaky.
Mm-hmm.
But to bubble up, ease of use wasn't really our strength. We had built the plumbing, the infrastructure. It was actually working, but it was very hard to use. And something which is not usable, not easy to use, is not going to be used.
Right.
So the lesson we learned from that particular day, if you will, it was a whole day, was we have to make our stuff not only just work, it has to really work. It has to be easy to use, easy to start. And that's what we'll be spending time on. And you'll see stuff up and down the stack now. What ease of use is a prime aspect of what we do now.
And I think that brings us to the topic that I wanted to look at today, which some people might think is not super exciting, but without it, nothing really works. You work primarily on the networking stuff.
Yes.
So tell me about the investments that we've made as a company, Microsoft, in networking for the cloud. Because making networks for the cloud has got to be very different than what I do with my little router at home.
Definitely. So you cannot have a first-class cloud without a first-class network.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, you are reaching out to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And when you reach out to the cloud, you have to go through a network. All of us have a cell phone or a PC at home or in the office, and there's a connection between that device and your cloud resources, VMs or whatever. Our strategy in Microsoft is to build a big global wide area network, which in simple English, a lot of wires, a lot of fiber around the globe, and make sure that you can reach the cloud very, very quickly. So from your device at home or in your office, etc., you are very close to our network. We have more than 120 points around the globe where your communication goes there. And once it hits our network, it's an old network. So what is our network? It's a global wide area network.
Uh-huh.
We own our own fiber in the US
okay.
and some parts of the world. We own multiple subsea cables from the US to Europe.
Oh my goodness.
And from the US to Asia. And importantly, we light up our own IP network over the whole globe. In other words, the Internet Protocol Network that runs Azure, and actually for that matter, all of Microsoft, runs on this one big, solid network.
So let me see if I understand this right, because when I took the networking class in school, my understanding was, I thought the internet was this one place, but then I realized it's a bunch of routers everywhere, routing traffic everywhere, to this other DNS server that's gonna give you the name, and then it's gonna go to this other machine. So it feels like what you're saying, and let's see if I understand this right, is we actually made our own internet over the whole world that houses our cloud infrastructure.
It's actually our intranet, if you will.
Okay.
Okay, the one that we control. To your point, we also peer with 2,400 plus ISPs around the globe.
I see.
So there's the traffic that comes from the internet that then hits the intranet, the WAN, between our regions,
okay.
then hits our resources. The VMs and the like.
So if I have a VM, because we have, and you can see all these on here, it's like 38 Azure regions, there's tons of places. If I have a VM that's, for example, in West US,
yep.
and another one that's in West India, like when I do the hop, let's just say I get a hop from, is it hopping into the internet?
No. And,
okay, so how is that working?
It stays, we guarantee that all traffic between all Azure resources stays in our network.
Okay.
Within the same building, the same region, or between regions across the globe.
So it's never going to leak. The packets are never going to leak out.
No, you can go to the internet if you want to by going out. Mm-hmm. You can come from the internet, but otherwise you stay in our network. And our network, therefore, has all the traffic. And we can have all the redundancy, all the availability, all the different paths to handle the traffic. None of the, frankly, the internet itself is a Wild West.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of routers just sitting everywhere, yeah.
From thousands of ISPs and transit providers and other acronyms. So the trick is get the traffic in and be able to guarantee the quality, or take it out at the last hop.
And that's interesting because, I mean, I didn't think of this. I thought the cloud was like someone else's computers somewhere else. But you're saying that once you're inside of our infrastructure, we control the quality of the actual infrastructure.
Yes. And the cloud to us is not just the buildings or the servers or the VMs. It's also how to connect these VMs together, not just within the building, but everywhere.
So as I'm thinking about that, like, we've effectively made our own worldwide area network. Mm-hmm. The amount of hardware that you've had to put in, it's got to be ridiculous. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of things that you're doing to make these things really fast?
Most important thing, and this may sound a bit funny, we view all the hardware boxes in our system, all the switches on routers, as fast, dumb switches.
I see.
Basically, it's a piece of, all these pieces of hardware take a packet in and a packet out. But all the intelligence, where should the packet go, what should happen to it, how it can be classified, etc., is done through our own software.
I see.
Our own SDN, software-defined network software.
Okay.
This is the key point here. We don't depend on the switches having some software coming from some third party to try to figure out what to do. We tell it what to do from outside. And you may ask why. That's how we guarantee the quality of the system. And that's how we can scale. You can't buy off-the-shelf software that can run this kind of network. So we had to build our own. So we buy off-the-shelf hardware, which is great. Our vendors are great. They give us nice, solid switching hardware.
Uh-huh.
But all the intelligence is in our software.
That's interesting. But, I mean, even just backing up, because I want to get into the software in depth, because this is super interesting.
Go ahead and answer.
Yeah. But are we laying wires across?
Yeah.
Because you mentioned we have wires under the ocean,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Well, first of all, they're all fiber.
Okay.
There's hardly any copper anymore in these systems.
Wow.
At that speeds we're talking about and at the distances we're talking about, everything is really fiber. But virtually every bit of information around the globe goes through fiber.
Wow.
You know, satellite and the like is a very small percentage. Mm-hmm. But even within data center, we do our own fiber as well. And we had to innovate not just in how we lay the fiber, but into the optics that runs the data over those fiber.
Holy cow.
So let me explain. When your applications for a developer opens a socket to send a packet,
uh-huh,
that packet ends up being a bunch of signals at the very bottom of your server, your machine. Something converts the electrical to optical.
Like pulses of
light.
Pulses
of light.
Okay.
Exactly. And it traverses the network as light. When it goes through a switch, typically it converts back to electrical, then back to light. And when it goes over the ocean, under the ocean, that is, it's a different kind of light, but it's light nonetheless. So we actually had to invest innovations into the actual optical components to get the right speed and the right power, because power is a big deal for these things. That's how much we had to really innovate to get this kind of scale up and running around the globe.
And that's amazing, because if I'm thinking fiber optics, the amount of bandwidth you have in one of those wires going across the ocean, how much can you put through those wires?
A lot. You can put a lot. And the interesting part is that the optical transmission equipment is getting better and better. So the you'd be surprised. We basically have two pairs of fiber that's running around the U.S. or underneath the ocean. And that's typically enough. And then we have multiple of them for redundancy.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing how much you can go through a given pair of, you know, terabits per second.
So, I mean, now I'm thinking about the throughput of these optics. Like, when they're coming into these dumb switches, though, is it too, I mean, how the packets going to just start? Is there a huge buffer?
The good thing is that you do scale out here.
Okay.
Okay? So, after you get the optics in, you can put them, you can have multiple switches, multiple routers.
Oh,
you
know what I'm saying?
And you can go build the network topologies from there on.
Okay, so we've invested a lot in infrastructure.
Yep.
We have a lot of dumb routers. We have a lot of wiring all around the world. We are guaranteeing that once you're inside of our cloud,
you stay
inside of our cloud. There's no leakage or seepage. Mm-hmm. So now let's move on to the software, because without, like you said, without the software, this kind of doesn't make sense. And I've always been confused, right? Because when I spin something up on Azure, there is a way to define these things called virtual networks. And I understand that they're on the same machine, but they're pretending they're not. I mean, how is this all the software work?
As you said, everything we discuss with the hardware is the foundation. It works and whatever. But what you see as a developer or as an administrator are software abstractions.
Okay.
The key one is something called virtual network.
Okay.
So a virtual network is an entity that you define in a given region. It's bound to a region. And it mimics effectively what you would do on premises. It's a network. You can have all the usual concepts you have in networking within the virtual network. You can have subnets, you can have IP addresses, you can do routing.
Masking and stuff.
You can do ACLs, network ACLs. You can do put in their third party or Azure services to do routing, etc. The beauty of it is that what would take you perhaps days or weeks to wire up is literally a few clicks on the portal or an API, because everything is virtual. And the way it actually is done, it's actually an overlay network over the physical network we discussed earlier.
Okay.
So you have physical wires in the data center with machines and so forth. You have virtual machines in every server, but the VNet, or the virtual network, is an overlay over the physical network, such that your VNet is isolated from my VNet.
But how low down on the OSI model is this? I mean,
to you, it looks as if it's an actual layer three.
Oh, okay, but so physical. It looks physical to us.
Layer 3 is more like an IP network,
right.
Okay? But to us, it's actually an overlay over the IP network.
I see. So when I make a virtual private network, am I assigning my own IP addresses?
You can. You can bring your own. Let us assign it. Your call. You can do all sorts of things with this thing. You can connect it back to on-premises through multiple technologies, VPN and the like. You can make it mimic what you typically do, or you can do new interesting topologies which are very much cloud-centric.
I mean, what are examples of cloud-centric topologies?
So, I'll give you a very good example. We have something called VNet peering.
Okay.
So you can create multiple VNets. You may have a central VNet where you put all your security boundaries, firewalls, etc. Mm-hmm. And then you can peer it with other VNets that your company owns, where you run your business logic or your VMs or your website and the like. And you can have a separation of concerns. The central VNet can be done by the security people one time. And they can have multiple VNets for your developers to have their own sandbox.
So it's like a way of walling off
yep.
by network. Because I mean, one of the powerful things that happened with networking was the network address translation, where your internal network is only accessible through the router
true.
And you can protect everything.
True.
And so that's the same kind of setup.
Same thing, but you can apply it to very large scale, to enterprise scenarios, to new network topologies. And by the way, just to give you one example, they can really go.
So the other thing that I've seen, and I don't know quite how this works, and so maybe you can help me, is I've heard that you can have your own network be part of the Azure network in some, explain this to me, because it's something that I've heard, maybe it's something that I'm not understanding right, maybe you can help me understand.
Okay, so you can connect your VNets to other networks.
Okay.
Specifically, you can connect it to your on-premises network. Okay, your corporate network, for example, or your data center, or your home network, for that matter. And you can do it, in broadly speaking, two ways. Through VPN services over the internet connection.
Okay.
Or what you're alluding to, through a private connectivity through ExpressRoute.
Okay.
Okay. ExpressRoute is a service that we offer along with more than 70 partners around the globe, where you can take your VNets in Azure and have a private connection between it and your corporate network, bypassing the internet completely.
So how are you bypass? Are you going, like, I'm trying to understand, because I read this, like, bypass it. How does that
basically
work?
Basically, we meet your network at one of the partner sites.
Oh, I see.
Okay? So many corporate networks have an edge in some partner site, and we have many, many partners around the globe. And we have pre-positioned the hardware is there, the software is there, and it can be a matter of a day or two to connect them. So there's no internet in the picture.
So there is, because I thought this is crazy, and as a developer, I'm like, the things are like firing off in my head. So I could have a local SQL Server instance with data VNetted in using ExpressRoute into an Azure application machine that's reading from that database.
You can, but be careful of latency and physics.
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
I mean, so there is that.
Yeah, so usually what people do is they connect them this way, But then the developers have to be very careful of where they place their client and servers.
Of course.
And how chatty the protocols are and the like.
And this brings up another additional question, because as I'm thinking about this, you mentioned that there is these edge sites.
Yep.
What is that, and how are they benefiting people that are out there using our cloud?
So as I mentioned earlier, when you have your phone, your device, and you're connecting to, say, a website in Azure, you have to get to Azure.
Right.
So the idea is that we have these edge sites located close to population sites, by the way, close to you, to your customers, and your employees.
Right.
They're the way to get your network packets from your device to us as soon as possible. So for example, here we are in Redmond, Washington. The closest edge node for us is in downtown Seattle. So if you pick up your phone now and don't use a corporate network and just go and go to a website, your packets go through your local ISP, your phone company, and they meet us physically in a building in Seattle. And that's it. From there, it hops directly over our optical network to wherever it's supposed to go within Azure.
And that's amazing because, like you said before, once it's in our network, it's in our
stays.
Network.
And the same applies, by the way, for Office 365, Bing, Outlook.com, et cetera. It's the same network. Same
so
network.
All of these other applications that same. Are all on Azure.
Exactly. So okay. we have scale and economies of scale this way.
Okay. So now the other thing that I want to ask you is you talked about software-defined networking. Like, I'm trying to understand, like, how that software is written. Is this something that, because there's got to be partners that want to be able to be involved with this kind of thing. How do I know if this code works?
So we have published academic papers. We received academic papers on all these designs. Many of the original designs, by the way, came from Microsoft Research.
I see.
So the company has been investing in this thing before even Azure started, to be honest, guys. We just had the luxury of using the ideas and the people who built it, actually. So the information is out there. But I have to tell you, the technology we used, only a handful of companies can actually use at our scale.
I see.
Unlike other companies, though, we actually put some of this stuff into Azure, into Windows as well.
Okay.
So Azure Stack has some of this technology at the lower scale. Windows Server 2016, for example, has some technology that Azure has already. Our software load balancer technology, for example, is in WS16.
I see. So now that we have all of this cool infrastructure, both hardware and software, this obviously, because the cloud is changing the way we're looking at technology, what implications does this have for people like IT pros, for example?
It means that a lot of the mundane work that you used to do on premises can now be done for them, the basic plumbing. You will never have to, frankly, haul a switch around and configure it and so forth.
Right.
Instead, you can move up the stack and look at, as I mentioned, VNet peering, virtual network security, how to do the basic configuration so your developers can have an easy time developing, and not worry about more the low-level stuff. Moreover, your agility. You can really become a champion for your developers, by the way.
Yeah.
You can set up these things in literally in minutes, maybe an hour if it's a very complicated topology, and off you go.
Before, we'd wait till everyone left on Friday, and then we'd like take everything out of the box, and then I'd wear my sweatpants
kind
of thing.
And you have to trace the Ethernet cables, and why is this not working, and so forth.
It's a bad wire every time, and it's Sunday at midnight. We know people are coming in tomorrow, and it was the wire.
Yep.
And that's not a problem that we're going to have.
You will not have it. As we have documented in some of the blogs we've done recently, have invested heavily in automating the discovery of, cables that are basically kinked.
Or, yes.
Bad connections and the like. We do this thing as a living. We're the plumbers, if you will. So we do the plumbing well.
So this brings us to another point, and you alluded to it already. Like when I was setting these things up, and then, my kid says, hey, our network isn't working, and I go to the router, I'm like, oh, let me just take the plug out and put the plug back in. Is there like a dude sitting in your places, like pulling plug out of the router to make sure it works? There's got to be problems.
Guys,
how do you fix them?
Just imagine the scale we have here.
There's like five dudes, apparently.
It's going to be a huge scale. Yeah. No, what we do is two basic ideas. First, everything is redundant like crazy.
Okay,
so, within a data center, you have like a mesh-like network. So from one place to the other, usually you have like 8, 16 connections.
Uh-huh.
And even under the ocean, we have multiple cables. And where a failure needs a long time to be fixed, we have even more connections. Okay, so in some countries, we may have 4 or 5 connections because people sometimes dig the cables from the ground.
Like Jack Sparrow drops his anchor and then your host, right?
It has happened.
Okay.
It has happened.
Okay.
There have been examples where either sharks or fishermen.
Sharks, just, yeah. Every time.
In any case, so we have a lot of redundancy. That's a big thing.
Okay.
The other thing, of course, is software. It goes back to software. We always have software running over this infrastructure that checks all connections. Not only checks for the basic easy one, which is on-off, which is really easy. Uh-huh. It looks for the gray failures. The one out of 10 to the minus 9 or 10 failure rates.
I see.
Okay, and flags those. So at that time, eventually a human has to go see them. But remember my first point, you have multiple paths. So even if one is flaky, we shut it off in software, which is important, so the other ones can work. And then a human eventually goes and fixes that one.
So there's got to be some interstellar, like, monitoring, like, huge thing going on there.
Huge thing. Again, we have documented this thing. They're all available if you're interested. We use a lot of machine learning because we get all these data points. You have to look at the patterns and understand the correlations. And then we, as I said, eventually shut it off. If it's going to be flaky, we won't shut it off. You want your app to work.
Right.
And eventually somebody goes fixes it.
And this is like, I mean, it's like that road that you drive on that's nice. No one says, oh, man, that road is so beautiful. They only complain when there's potholes, right?
You precisely.
And so now that I've sort of tried to allay the fear of the IT pro that's always going to see if that wire works, you're telling us that there's multiple paths. If that wire doesn't work, we're going to find out about it. But in the meantime, while they're fixing that kink in the wire, there's other paths.
Yep.
What does this change mean for software developers? We talked about the IT pro. Let's talk about the software dev.
Well, one aspect is, as a dev, you're going to get your basic network services much faster, as we discussed earlier. But moreover, within your given virtual network, you have a lot of freedom. Okay, you're isolated by definition from everybody else. And once you do the right security boundaries, you cannot do anything bad to anybody else, if you will.
Right.
And if you want to do, for example, have the ability to have a firewall, a WAF, a web application firewall in front of your app, it's as easy as clicking a button and say, I want a firewall. If you want to do some other monitoring, packet capture, it's all as simple as clicking a button here. You don't have to go to a VM and configure some funky software to do packet capture. It's a simple experience on the portal. So we have these features that not only abstract the network, but makes it easy for you to understand how your app is behaving in the network and how your app is being secured in the network.
So let's talk about those two things, because those are interesting to me. One of the biggest challenges we have with web applications in particular are security issues.
Oh, yes.
It's like the biggest thing.
Yep.
And if you have a security problem, you're hosed.
Of course.
You're not hosed, but you're going to lose a lot of money.
It's a big deal.
And so one of the things that I remember doing back when we had to have our own servers is I would use the router to protect me.
Yep.
Right? I would say, only this port.
Yeah.
Only forward to this. And then you can have appliances also that say, wow, that's a lot of Synax coming at me. Or, oh my goodness, why am I getting a lot of UDP packets here? Mm-hmm. What's going on? Are you saying that the web application firewall is the same kind of thing?
It's very similar, but let me step back for a second.
Okay.
The way it works in the cloud is that there are two sides, and it's a two-way street, by the way. There's the infrastructure security, which we take care of.
Okay.
And there's application security, which we give you tools for you to take care of.
I see.
So let me explain. For the infrastructure, we have all the redundancy I mentioned, but we also have a lot behind the covers to make sure that the infrastructure is secure, from physical security, et cetera. As you may know, we are among all the public cloud providers. We have the most compliant certifications of anybody else.
Right.
We can prove that we've invested a lot in security controls, processes, and so forth. We also protect the infrastructure, and by implication, your infrastructure from DDoS attacks. Because, you know, it's the internet out there.
So that comes for free already?
It comes for free. Okay. It's basically the infrastructure.
Okay.
But as I mentioned, it's a two-way street. We have to give you now, above that, all the SDN tools, VNets and ACLs, whatever, for you to secure your application.
I see.
Because your app has to itself be able to close its ports, mm-hmm. not do the silly things. Because, I mean, the easiest thing to have a very simple app is divide by zero.
Yeah.
The app is gone, I can't do anything about it.
That's right.
Same thing, don't open your ports to everybody and say, I'm on the internet. So what we do is we provide a developer with a lot of tools, both at the network level and firewalls, as well as third-party infrastructure, which your IT folks may like to use, reuse. Whatever they use on-premises, we have the version of it also in the public.
Is it cloud. A virtual version of
it's
it?
It's all virtual.
Okay.
Everything in Azure is virtual, guys.
Which is cool.
You know, the only hardware we have are the wires, the fiber discuss, and the VM, the servers.
That's awesome. And so the other thing you mentioned was packet capturing.
Yep.
So you mentioned the firewall aspect, and then you mentioned packet. Why would someone do that, and what benefit would a software developer gain?
So usually, and developers hopefully will resonate with this point, whenever something goes wrong, usually the network is a problem. It's always the case. It's always the network
he's
first.
He's been blamed a lot for stuff, kids.
Every time it's a network first. Yeah. And 9 out of 10 or whatever the ratio is, it's usually something else, something really interesting or complicated. And as a developer, sometimes your code may be have a funky interaction with somebody else. You're calling somebody and they're not coming back and so forth. Usually the first step to debug these things, get a packet capture. Why are these VMs not talking to each other? Or why are they going to sleep at the wrong time, et cetera? Packet capture, especially in a complex application, can be a pain.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You have to go log in the box and do this and collect the data and so forth. So we built this thing as a service now in Azure.
Oh, I see. So I'm not going to be installing WinPCAP or anything like that.
And actually, the format is PCAP. You get the standard formats through, and you can use standard tools like Wireshark.
Oh, my goodness.
But the capture is automated, and you decide where the capture goes, in a blob or a local file.
And this is like the WinPCAP stuff that happened, Wireshark stuff, but in the cloud, and you just say
exactly.
Start now.
And you get the file back, and then you can put it in Wireshark in your laptop or whatever you want.
Oh, my goodness. That would
we also have integration with other third parties as well as Microsoft technologies.
And so you could literally get down to the network level of what your application is doing to find out why is this so chatty or why is it not chatty at all?
Exactly.
Or who turned on the Bonjour service?
For example, or you did the wrong thing with the firewall, yeah. Et cetera, you know.
That's awesome. So now that we've looked at sort of the hardware implications, we've looked at the software that we've built, we've talked about what it means for IT pros and what it means for software developers, what's in the future for Azure Networking? What are we looking to do?
You're going to see a lot more investments around security and networking.
I see.
The intersection of these two areas are very important. You're going to see a lot more around monitoring and logging because what we have now is, I think, is very good. We're going to have more. Uh-huh. We want to make it easy for everybody to consume networking as services.
Without knowing they're doing it, though. I mean, it's pretty magical.
That's the thing. I mean, I guess if you don't call me, that's actually best for me.
Yeah.
Seriously, because I'm usually called when something is wrong, if you will. Or as you said, you know, people complain when the plumbing not working.
Yeah, or when there's potholes on the road. Yeah.
So we want to make it easy. This is the main message. So you're also going to see speed increases.
Okay.
We demonstrated some as last year's Ignite. We're going to see more this year. We are marching to have the fastest within data center networking of anybody, by the way. And you'll see more of us coming soon as well.
And that means that, as a software developer, if I have global failover, right? Let's just say. For some reason, somebody did something really bad in the software, deployed it, and everything burns in that virtual network. First of all, it won't harm someone else.
True.
But then when it fails over to another region, you're still going to get that fast speed.
Exactly. But remember, the failover is your responsibility.
Oh, I know.
We give you the resources and the same abstractions everywhere.
That's amazing.
It's really cool.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
There's been
a series of blog posts, I understand, that you've put out. I'll make sure to put links to them at the bottom.
They have the high-level pictures, they have simple videos, and importantly, they have all detailed references if you want to go next level down.
Fantastic. So hopefully you won't see much of him because everything will be so beautiful that you won't have to worry about it.
I welcome feedback anytime, guys. It's easy for you to reach me as well.
Thanks so much, Yusuf, for spending some time with us. We've been learning all about Azure networking, the investments we've been putting in hardware, software, what it means for IT pros, and what it means for software devs. We also looked a little bit at the future of Azure Networking. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.